one of the keys is stories take a one-dimensional concept, the data, add a three-dimensional face to that. So a story about the information you share makes it more meaningful to the audience.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Mark Brown. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Mark. One, when he was a high school student in Jamaica, he shook hands with Cuban President Fidel Castro. Two, he has appeared in an infomercial. And three, at the age of 16, he conducted an award-winning chorale. Mark Brown, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you so much, George. It's a pleasure to be, my joy to be here and spend some time with you and to share your intended message with your listening audience and your viewers as well.
Mark, I think it's fair to let the listeners and the viewers know also that in 1995, remember the year? That was the year that you won the World Championship of Public Speaking for Toastmasters. And you did it by telling a story. And what we're going to look at today is the power of stories and how business presenters can use stories more effectively, more consistently in delivering their messages, whether it's a team meeting, a sales presentation, or a leadership, get everyone inspired presentation. What's the magic of stories? Why do they work?
Well, George, I believe stories work well because they connect with individuals on a personal and on a heart level. Think about this. We like to watch movies. We read books. We read audiobooks. We watch TV programs. We'll sit down and watch 4, 5, 6 seasons of a television program because of the story. And the story has characters. The story brings scenarios. The stories have conflict. The stories have interaction. And at a very high level, George, stories mirror our lives because our lives are ongoing stories. And the cool thing is, growing up in Jamaica, we didn't always have TV and movies, but I kind of remember we used to have scheduled, if you're from the USA, scheduled power outages. And at that time, you don't watch TV. We only had one channel anyway. But one of our neighbors, Mr. Scott, used to always tell stories, and the kids were all enthralled. And stories have been told through time immemorial, and stories still work today, even in a business environment.
And in a business environment, and people might say, business leaders might say, well, it's one thing to tell, stories to your children, but we're serious here. This is the business world. We got to deal with money and people and schedules. And when can a story be used in a business situation?
A story can be used in almost any situation. I had a coaching client, and I do coach speakers. I had a coaching client one time who was very concerned. Mark, I can't tell my stories. I talk to CFOs and CIOs and CEOs. I said, you do? That's really interesting. Well, think about this. The name is John Brown, CFO, CIO, CEO. If you remove CFO, CIO, and CEO, what do you got left? You got John Brown. And who's John Brown? John Brown's maybe a husband, maybe a father. He's a manager. He's a leader. He interacts with other people, and his life has experiences, and the stories can be told. Also in business, you may have information, and data is big in business. We have stats. We have facts. We have case studies. We have poll results. We have all these data. But one of the keys is stories take a one-dimensional concept, the data, add a three-dimensional face to that. So a story about the information you share makes it more meaningful to the audience. For example, George, I read recently that the National Transportation Group here in the USA did a study of fatalities in car accidents. And the report was that 47% of those who passed away were not wearing seatbelts. And that's an interesting and powerful statistic. And it's great. I could share that in business. But if I said 47% of people who die were not wearing seatbelts, Josh was one. See, Josh was a high school student, 17 years old, a great hockey player with a future. I mean, colleges all over the country wanted to have John on their hockey team, and they won their provincial championship, and he and his buddy went over ice cream one evening, not too far from home. Mom will be back in half an hour. And off they went to enjoy some ice cream and celebrate. They had won the championship. It was great. It's only a few miles from home, I should say kilometers. But on the way back, their car was struck by a drunk driver. John and his three buddies were in the car. His three buddies had belts on. And they were injured, a couple of broken ribs, and was sad. But Josh was the only kid who was thrown from the car and lost his life. And investigators learned that he had not been wearing his seatbelt. A promising future is gone. A family grieves and mourns because Josh did not wear his seatbelt. You don't want to be one of that 47%. Put your seatbelts on and drive safely. Now, I made that up, but a statistic, 47% of fatalities are people who don't wear seatbelts for business purposes, for argument's sake. But when I tell Josh's story, we all know a Josh. We know somebody who's 17. We know somebody who can play hockey well. We know somebody who has won a championship. We know someone with a future, and we know someone who has lost a child. Now, the emotional connection makes the number more meaningful. And my friend, Ed Tate, who you've had on your podcast, I believe, says, turn the numbers back into people. And you do that with your stories. Stories add meaning to your information. You could be running a corporation. You're talking about reductions in staffing. Well, that staffing are human beings with families, with children. You talk about, oh, great year this year. We get to have a bonus. Wonderful. And that bonus means that Francine here, who has been here for 33 years, she now can take her kids on that vacation. They wanted to go to Yellowstone Park in the USA. We're happy to do that for you. That's what it means for us to offer you this bonus. There are a plethora of scenarios in which the story adds meaning to the numbers and the data. And I would recommend anyone who has to give business presentations to look for the humanity behind the numbers. Look for the story behind the data. Establish a connection with your audience, even in smaller group meetings, because every number means something to someone. Find that meaning, share that meaning, and make the numbers that much more significant. And you do that with your story.
Mark, I can see how the statistic 47% weren't wearing their seatbelt. It just kind of goes in one ear and out the other one. And we might even pause for a microsecond and thinking, gee, that, you know, I can't imagine that many people don't have their seatbelts on. But then the thought's gone and we've forgotten it. And if you ask me next week what the number was, I don't know, a bunch, a lot, I think. Yeah. But when you tell the story of Joss and his future and his friends, we see, I see him in the car with the ice cream, I see him flying out the windshield when, you know, in the accident. So that's a stronger connection, stronger memory.
Yeah. And, you know, also in business, stories can also help you tell your story. How did you form your business? What were your challenges? You could say, well, I had a rough first 3 years, but I beat the curve. They say a business normally gets to be profitable after 7 years. I made it in three. That's nice. But I'm thinking, how? You can talk about your collaboration. Who did you work with? What steps did you take? What were your mistakes? You tell the story of how you built your business, and now you are not just a business that thrived after 3 years, but you're a business who had to establish relationships with so-and-so company. You know, when I first went to the bank, I met so-and-so, and we had a conversation about this, and he told me, here are my options. it becomes more engaging. So next, yes, you built your business, got a good bank loan, had a good relationship, and it was great. But when we hear the story of how you formed the business, how you collaborated, what steps you had to take, what challenges you had to overcome, what it looked like, well, you know, in 92, I hit a recession. That was really difficult for us. We lost 4 employees, one who had been there from the start. It was hard to say goodbye because he had a family to take care of. And all of a sudden, we're now engaged in your process. How did you overcome that? What was your strategy? Who did you meet with? What did you do? And the story helps us understand how your business grew. You can say, I have plans to expand. We got a $2 million expansion planned. We're going to get a building over here and so on. But what's the motivation behind it? What is your process? Who are you working with? And what made you decide to make that choice to have that building in that location? The backstory can also be helpful. When you're talking to investors, yes, they want to know the numbers, but they want to know the why behind the numbers. They want to see your projections. What do you see happening? How are people's lives going to be changed? So even in business, in finance, in retail, in sales, in commerce, in info technology, it matters not what the industry may be, George, but the stories help your individuals who are hearing you, your prospects, your clients, your customers, your collaborators, your associates. Everyone connects more closely when they have the story behind the information.
Mark, in your experience, what works better, a story full of struggle or a story where it was easy?
That depends. Now, I tell you why I say that. It depends on your objective and why you tell the story. If you tell a story to be entertaining, easy might be nice. But if the struggle of the main character or the hero in the story becomes significant in terms of impact on the audience, by all means, tell the story. Some stories are not about a struggle. Some stories are very heartwarming because maybe your intention is to touch the heart and to inspire the audience. But if you want the audience to know, listen, the struggle you go through may not be the same struggle, but I share the same emotion. You know what I mean by that? And tell a story of your struggle. It may be a different struggle, but the emotion is the same. The process is the same. It's what we have to go through. Whatever you feel through your struggle, it could be a health issue, maybe a similar emotion to somebody who goes through a financial struggle or a struggle with a loss or a struggle to build a business. Because I think it was Paul Ekman, a psychologist many years ago, who said he determined we have 6 basic emotions: happiness, sadness, anger, fear, surprise, and disgust. And those are 6 basic emotions which we all share. And the story may be different, but if the emotion is the same, that's a connection. And there are times the story of the struggle is necessary to inspire the audience. And there are times the feel-good story is a story that works. It depends on what you need to do.
Where do we find stories? You know, people say, hey, there's nothing really that... nothing special about my life. I just, you know, everything, you know, no great struggle. I just had a normal upbringing, you know, and you know, my dad only hit me once in a while. Normal, like all the other kids on the street.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I often get clients who say, well, you know, Mark, my life is boring. I don't have a great story to tell. I didn't climb Mount Everest uphill, backwards, bare feet, both ways, you know, in 18 feet of snow. But here's the truth. No, we don't have a Mount Everest story. We didn't walk on the moon. We didn't fly into outer space. We didn't find a cure for polio. We don't have these dramatic stories. We aren't all Martin Luther King, you know, Mahatma Gandhi. We aren't these great people. Okay, pause. Consider this. Who in your audience has done that? How about maybe nobody? Which means your audience, by and large, is you. And your emotions, your experiences, your family struggles, whatever you've been through, it's likely the audience will appreciate it. The other piece is this. We live our lives in such a way that we think our lives are boring and not spectacular. We think our lives are mundane, for the most part, many of us. But I learned this truth, George. One man's mundane is another man's magnificent. I'll say it again. One man's mundane is another man's magnificent. For example, I left Jamaica when I was 18 years old and I moved to New York City. I had $40 in my pocket and just a dream for a new life. That was my life. That was my existence. And it was a long time ago. It was 41 years ago. And it seemed just like normal to me. There are people who read my bio. What? You came from Jamaica with 40 bucks? Now you're a world champion speaker and speaking coach and keynoter. What? What? And to me, it's, well, that's my life. Similarly, it's an old 7-Up commercial I saw on TV many years ago with the American boxer Sugar Ray Leonard. And he was in the gym working out, and his little son was there working out with him. And a bunch of kids walk in and they go, "Oh man, look, it's the champ, it's the champ." And Ray Leonard's son says, "Eh, it's just my dad." What that means is perspective makes a difference. What may seem as your normal life may actually have value and intrigue for someone else. So first of all, let's not think our lives are not significant. You shouldn't think George Torok, well, you know, his life is kind of okay. Yeah, he's got a podcast. It's called Your Intended Message. But what's the big deal? But I'm sure there are parts of your life, George, that will amaze me, that will amaze other people, but you don't realize it. So first of all, understand your life has value and your experiences are also quite valuable. And we record many of our experiences and we don't know we have stories literally under our noses. Where are they? They're right here in what we call our camera roll or our photo gallery. What we fail to realize is our photographs tell stories. And I have my photograph gallery right here. And I confess, I'm kind of a nerd. So I have albums and different folders for my photographs. I even have one here that says childhood. And it has a whole bunch of black and white pictures from my childhood. And maybe you can't see this, but you mentioned in your intro about me being a 16-year-old kid and conducting a youth chorale. In high school, I went to an all-boys high school, and somebody sent me a photograph from the 1970s. It's black and white. And what I have here is a photograph of me right here conducting my high school boys choir in 1978. The story there. And it's on the photograph. So here's my challenge for everyone watching this. At some point today, you grab your mobile device, pull out your camera roll or your photo reel. If you're an Android user like me, don't hate us lowly Android users, iPhone users, and look at some of the photographs you have. Ask yourself, why is that photograph there? What do I like about it? And I believe anyone who wants to share a message, you'll find your photographs tell stories is a message there. Maybe it's your profile photograph. My profile photograph is my wife, Andrea, and me taken earlier this year. And we had our 39th anniversary earlier this year. And if anybody were to ask me, "Mark, can you tell me a story, a picture?" I can do it like that. And chances are you can too, George and your viewers. You can tell a story based on a photograph. So right there, you have a wealth of stories literally under your nose on your mobile device. I encourage you. Take a look at that. There could be a story to be told there, and it could be a transformational story. It may be a fun story. It could be lighthearted. It could be a story of a struggle. It could be a story that touches your heart, but your stories are right under your nose. And here's the key. This is the Mark Brownism to pull those stories out. You ask yourself three questions when you look at your photographs. What amazed you? What amused you? And what moved you? What amazed you? What amused you? What moved you? See, the story is going to draw some emotion. And then the key question becomes the bonus question. What lesson can I learn from this? And I can almost guarantee if you answer those questions with any photograph and say, what's the lesson? When you find the lesson, before long, you'll find the message. And then you can share your intended message with the photograph as a tool, as a vehicle to get your message across to your willing audience. The same applies to business. We take photographs at work, our coworkers, where we were desk, we're on the road, we go to a convention, we take photographs. What does that convention photograph remind you of? What amazed you when you were there? What amused you? What made you laugh? What touched you? What moved you? A story there. There's a message there, and your audience needs to hear it. It's a lot to say in 2 minutes, but I've found so much power in the stories that we tell. And think about this. Can you remember being in an event, a conference, a meeting, where someone told a story and they put a photograph on the IMAX screen or in their virtual background or in their PowerPoint display? They put the photograph. Why? Because the photograph helps to remind them of the story, reinforces their message, and has an impact on you, the listener and the viewer. Tell your stories, use your photographs. There's a wealth of material right there.
So one place to look for our stories is just on our phone. Look at the photos we've taken recently. And I suppose for those of us who have the old style photographs that are in an album, you know, a paper album somewhere, you could pull them out and flip through them, or even maybe even an old high school yearbook.
Definitely. Definitely. I have a photograph here. It's on my desk that was taken in August of 1995. It was the afternoon after I won the world championship. I was at the pool at the Town and Country Resort Hotel in San Diego with my son, David, who was then 10 months old, not even 10 months old. He's now almost 27. But this is the actual photograph. And it says on the back, 1995, right there. This is the actual photograph. And I've taken photographs of photographs in an album and used them also to tell stories. So that's one good source. Any photograph, old school or high tech, any photograph is a tool to share your intended message, my friend.
Now, you brought something else up too. You talked about high school.
Yeah.
And I suppose if we were to look back at our learning experiences, whether it was school, whether it was on the job learning, whether it was just taking a course or maybe just life, the lessons we learned can become powerful stories. Now, what about embarrassing moments? Should we use them in our stories?
I say yes, because it provides two things. It provides authenticity and vulnerability, right? And I have a little formula that I created that some people think is very cheesy. Authenticity plus vulnerability equals credibility. Authenticity plus vulnerability equals credibility. When the audience knows you're willing to share your failures, your foibles, and your falls with them, they'll say, yeah, he or she's a real person. They understand. They aren't always perfect. And in truth, we tell our failure stories, and our failure stories can inform, educate, inspire someone else. It can shorten their learning curve. Okay, I'm not going to do that. And in so doing, you're actually helping your audience in their own growth and development. So the failure stories can be very, very helpful. Matter of fact, there's a movement across North America now. I'm not going to say the actual word because it's somewhat defensive, but it's across the world now, and they call them F-up nights, where people tell the stories of how they messed up as a means of informing, inspiring, and providing solace for those who have been in a similar spot. And what I found with stories is this. More often than not, we don't realize as storytellers how much in common our audience has with us when they hear our stories. They'll come and say, you know what? I thought I was the only one. And chances are it's happened to you before, or if you're watching, somebody has told you, I thought I was the only person who went through that. Your stories are common, are connectors. Our stories are connectors. Another Markism is this, the common connects. So we all have mistakes. We all have failed in some area of parenting. Perhaps we've all had issues on the job, or had to have that difficult conversation, or had an issue with somebody we love. We've all had those emotional experiences, and we share them, and we feel common bond, both negative and positive, but share the common story. So the failure story can be very, very helpful, informative, instructive, and can help somebody shorten their learning curve, whatever they may be doing.
interesting. At one time, I would tell some stories when my kids were going through the teenage years. I would tell a couple stories about the challenges I was having with the kids. And you know, the reason I did that is because I wanted, because I looked young and I wanted people to know that I was old enough to have teenagers. That's why. But there was a point to it. And the interesting thing is that people would come up to me after and start telling me about their kids.
Yeah, exactly. And now I got to ask you a question, George. When that happened the first time, and you began to see that this actually is a wow, how did it make you feel as a parent? And now you look back as a presenter, do you see the value in those experiences?
Definitely. What it made me realize was that my story helped them voice and feel their own story.
Yeah. Yes. Because we feel now you gave them the freedom. You gave them permission to share their story. You also gave them the comfort in knowing, you know what? I'm not the only one. Somebody else has gone through this. And sometimes that leads to other conversations. Hey, how did you handle that? I can't get my kid to, you know, not only in parenting, but in different areas of our lives. When you share your story and sometimes your difficulty, it lets somebody else feel, okay, maybe we can build a relationship here. You could end up being a collaborator. And you never know, by sharing a common story, what kind of relationship can develop. And the influence you can have that expands because you've now reached one person, you pass on your knowledge to them, they pass it on to someone else, and it goes viral, so to speak, because you told a story in which you were vulnerable, in which you shared your own concerns, and you shared a story that you thought maybe no big deal, but someone said, I find value in that. And then they use that. That's wonderful.
Mark, do you have a story that you might tell to a person who's maybe they're early in their career, they're in the workplace and they're uncertain about which way to go. They like some things, but they don't like other things, and they just really don't know where they're going to go with their life. Do you have a story to help move them?
At some point in our lives, all of us have uncertainty. You know, I was 18. I came to America. I didn't know what I was going to do. I went to work for a bank. I was working as a bank teller. I failed at that, lost that job. I wound up in the safe deposit vault, opening and closing safe deposit boxes. The guys who worked down there were all literally dirty old men. I'm 19 years old. What am I doing here? It was very, very discouraging. But I realized I was at the beginning of my life, my working life. And I had to do everything I could to make the most of my situation. So I took an aptitude test for computer programming. I didn't know much. I didn't know a thing about it, but I took the test. And the mindset was, as difficult as it may be to learn something new in a foreign country with a Jamaican accent, with people who are older than I am, you see all the different issues I'm dealing with. I had to say, listen, at least I'm here. I will do my best to make the most of it. I had to identify individuals with whom I could build relationships, whom I trusted, sort of be guides for me. When you're new on a job and you're not so sure, not so secure, it's important, I think, to find the individuals who will be encouraging to you and supportive of you. You know, I had Bill Skinner when I was a young programmer in New York back in 1981. So much so when Bill Skinner left the job and a couple of years later, he actually recruited me to go work with him at a different bank. Because you have people you build relationships with. I can go back to people who were encouraging me. It's a consultant. His name was John Lanigan, a consultant. But he saw this young kid who was kind of unsure, wavering, and he took me under his wing and he gave me some guidance and some direction. So if you're struggling on the job and you're not sure where your direction is, identify those who want to help you will materialize. The old saying, when the student is willing, a teacher will appear. Those who see potential in you, who want to help you, they'll materialize, and be willing to accept help from those who can help you. There's a mindset that says, you know, I must pull myself up by my own bootstraps. I've never had bootstraps, by the way, so I don't know what that means. But the idea is I have to be me, take care of myself. We don't go through this world alone. So for the individual who is having that kind of struggle on the job, to me, learn all you can. Read, educate yourself, and build good relationships with individuals who are there. There may be those who don't want to help because humans are humans, but there's always one who can and will. And throughout my career as a computer programmer analyst working in a bank on into speaking, I've always found individuals who were willing to help me, willing to support me. And the idea of mentorship and getting coached is real. These days, coaching and mentorship are critical parts of our growth. If you feel uncertain in a job, can you find yourself in a mastermind group, other like-minded individuals who share best practices, ideas? How can you educate yourself? Is it an online course? Do you read books? Do you watch videos? What can you do to become proficient at what you do? Because when you do that, then your confidence grows because you are proficient, you are knowledgeable, you're educated. And add to that, develop the art of communicating and speaking well. When you do that, your ideas, you can express them clearly. You can be more persuasive in your communication. When you have the confidence to express yourself, people will no longer look at you, but they begin to look to you for your thoughts, your ideas, your perspective. It's all part of helping to build yourself and to grow yourself with support, encouragement, and help from mentors, coaches, and others who want to help you proceed and succeed.
Mark, you help people deliver their presentation, especially tell their stories well. If people want to find out more how to work with you, I believe the website is Mark Brown Speaks, one word, markbrownspeaks.com.
Yes, it is.
And if, in particular, if they're looking for the coaching, that's under the tab of /executive-coaching.
Correct.
That's at markbrownspeaks.com. Mark Brown, who are the ideal candidates for your type of help?
Ideally, anyone who wants to give a better presentation, anyone who has a presentation and not quite sure how to make it better. I work with individuals who are new and emerging speakers. I have clients who are professional speakers. I got one good buddy of mine. He's a German living in Barcelona, Spain. And whenever he writes a keynote, he always sends me a WhatsApp. Hey, Mark, working on a new keynote. Let me book some time with you. And he has gone in public and said, my keynote coach, Mark Brown. So I do work with professionals as well as new and emerging speakers. I had a client yesterday. Right now, where we are, I'm with him. We're looking at what is his best topic based upon his experience. So I help people to actually frame their message, find the right stories, craft the presentation, work on the actual delivery. So I am a soup to nuts presentation person. I'll work with you from the inception all the way to platform presentation. I've had the pleasure, George, of helping several Toastmasters speech contestants, several runners-up, and also several world champions like Darren LaCroix. I think you had Darren on your program as well. And Ed Tate credits me with one of advice I gave to him. I don't say this to brag, because the truth be told, when I won the title 26 years ago, and friends, trust me, it was the last millennium. I do have the VHS videotape to prove this. I got help from my mentor and coach, David Brooks, who was a 1990 world champion. So I'm passing on what I have learned. I've honed my skills as a coach. So I've been able to help people in the Toastmasters world, in the professional world, and those who are what we call new and emerging speakers as well.
So one of the messages I'm hearing there, if you want to be a leader, if you want to be a champion, then learn from other leaders, other champions.
Definitely, definitely. And learning is a lifelong process, because I believe one more Markism: when I stop learning, I stop living.
Mark, if you could, in wrapping up, if you could give advice to a business leader who is giving a presentation, perhaps their people are starting to maybe come back into the office, or you know, we're trying to define how we're going to, you know, this hybrid model, or where it's going to be. Things are uncertain, but you're a leader who needs to provide some certainty to your team. If you could give that leader some advice or tips in telling a story that will help them get there, what one, two, or three ideas would you offer them?
Well, idea number one is this: be as real and open, as vulnerable as possible. And I always recommend this in that scenario. I recommend you go back. I recommend you go back and rehearse the previous times you had struggle, you had difficulty and overcame it. Tell a story of your own struggle. I share a story of a brush with death I had back in 1993. And I remember how I came through that. When you can rehearse and retell a story of past success, you can provide your current audience hope that if we could have gotten through that back then, we can get through this now. That's why I believe, George, many people here in the USA through the COVID crisis have referred to previous pandemics. They've referred to how we came through the 9/11/01 attacks. And they go back, if we got through that, we'll get through this. So you share a message of hope, tell your story and frame it in terms of what you have done in the past. I also recommend turning questions into statements. This is kind of unique. If you, as a leader, you know the questions in your team members' minds, questions like, will we ever get back to normal? Questions like, will I ever be able to recover my income? Questions like, will we as a country and as a world get past all of this? One is a mindset. Let's change the question into a statement. We will create a new normal if we can't get back to our old normal. We will create that. We'll do that together. We will get through this if we follow, if we act wisely, follow safety protocols, and continue to work together towards our ultimate goal. We will attain success if we focus on what our objectives are, despite the distraction of what's happening around us. And we will be successful if we invest our hearts and not just our minds in what we're doing. If we add the heart, if we truly care about people, if we think not only of the bottom line, if we don't see just positions, but people, if we can do that, we can build stronger bonds of support for each other. We can have the hope that we need, and we can work together towards creating the future we had envisioned before this all happened. But it will take us doing this together. I've shared that message with other audiences before. I believe it. If we go back, what we've been through, that inspires us. If we refocus our vision, if we shift the mindset from will I and doubt to more of confidence, if we do this together, we will. I believe we can find greater success. It will not be overnight. I don't think it will, but I think it will happen if we approach it in those ways.
My guest today is Mark Brown, reminding us that stories add meaning to the numbers.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.